I'm John Wilson. Welcome to Owned and Operated. Twice a week, we talk about home service businesses. And if you're a home service entrepreneur, then this is going to be the show for you. We talk about our own business in residential plumbing, HVAC, and electric. And we also talk about business models that we just find interesting. Let's get into it. If you like what we talk about on our social media, on Twitter, on this podcast, then you should be signed up for our newsletter. Go to ownedandoperated.com, where every Friday we break down our business, we break down insights, things we're learning, things we're working on, and it's good stuff. Check it out, ownedandoperated.com. Today on Owned and Operated, we talk with Aaron Harper from Rolling Suds, a power washing franchise. I had no idea how involved power washing was. Most of the power washing that I've been exposed to is some one or two tweets or some people on TikTok. So this was fascinating. The biggest unlock was most of the customers are B2B. It's other businesses. Had no idea. This was a great conversation. We dive into his history. We dive into the other franchises he's worked with, and we talk about the power washing business model. Great episode. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back to Owned and Operated. Jack, what's up, dude?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. Good. I'm pumped. We've got Aaron Harper on with us today from Rolling Suds. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Hey, how's it going, John? How's it going, Jack? Good to see you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. This is going to be good. We're pumped to talk washing, which I don't think we've covered that business. We did gum blasting, which is probably the closest that we've gotten.
Yeah, we haven't touched this. I was thinking about it the other day and going, man, this is one of those ones that you actually see a lot too in terms of offerings. I'm really interested in digging in on some of the details here.
Me too. I'm excited, guys. I've listened to a lot of your episodes. You guys have a great podcast.
Yeah, we do our best.
Try.
I don't know if it's that good, but we do our best. Cool. Aaron, could you give us a little bit of background? You were sharing just off camera how you worked on another franchise, which I thought was as interesting as Rolling Suds. So maybe tell us a little bit about that, and then we get to dive into washing.
Yeah. So I've been in franchising for years. That's my background. So I actually didn't have any experience in power washing other than one failed attempt at using a power washer one time. So I'll
nice.
Catch you guys up to speed. Both of the businesses that I've helped franchise, I was a W-2 employee at, and they both became the biggest brand in the world in that specific industry, franchise brand. So it started with carpet cleaning. That business was purchased by a big property restoration company. They wanted to build a platform company of brands. They put the leadership team from the carpet cleaning franchise in charge of their platform division, bought a brand called the Patch Boys. That brand needed a lot of help. There's 100 units sold, 40 franchisees, five of them were happy when I got involved. So not great numbers. It was also COVID. So it was June of 2020. They're like, Aaron, sell this. And I'm like, hold on, you know, not going to do that. Like, we got to put systems in place first and call all the franchisees, ask them what they needed from us. It was that like age old franchisor lied to them. Terrible story. So we built systems around everything they needed, marketing, training, recruiting, helping with scaling the business, financial modeling, business coaching. First franchisee we launched did 30 grand his first month, had no experience in drywall repair, was profitable. So I took that business then and grew it in 24 months by 223 locations in 2 years. We became the biggest drywall repair company in the world. Every one of those locations opened. They opened with full-time labor hired prior to going to training and the phone ringing at training with large marketing sources. So we had also grown Belfour, the company I was working at, to 12 brands. We were 4,700 locations, 55 countries, built the second largest platform company of service brands in the world from a unit count.
Belfour owns Patch now?
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
So I worked for Belfour. Belfour bought Patch Boys from the founder. Founder exited immediately.
Yep.
And then we rebuilt it.
When you say, just so I understand the numbers that we're talking about here. So 100 sold, 40 franchisees, five that were happy. So that means at some point we sold 100 units, but only 40 were active. Just so I'm hearing this right?
No. So 40 franchisees will typically own multiple franchisees.
Understood.
So it's 40 franchisees that own 100 territories. Five out of those 40 franchisees were actually like running a good business and happy and like, you know, didn't regret their decision.
Yeah. When you come into a situation like that, I would have to imagine that there's going to be some churn of franchises or franchisees. How many of those get salvaged versus how many churned?
Well, so you have to have a very realistic discussion with every owner about what their expectations are about the business and like whether or not those expectations are realistic. And there are some that we just knew weren't going to happen. So we were going to get them out, move on. But there were some where we had to be like, we're going to try to work this out for the next 6 months, but If you think you're going to run the business from a different state while keeping your job full time, that's just not going to work. And you're going to take a loss. We were able to turn it around. Like, I was pretty proud of what we did. The franchisees, like, I'm still friends with them on Facebook. Like, they know my kids' names. Like, we turned it around and like those franchisees were successful and I'm super proud of what we did. And I was being asked to like speak at different conferences at franchising about how to do it the right way. I think we could have done better, but I wasn't in charge of like the operations side of things. I was more on the development and selecting franchisees. I was really involved in helping restructure it at the beginning. But once we had it in place, it was time to grow it. And that's when I grew it by 223 locations when I thought we were ready to open.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Can I ask some questions about the drywall patch business? I think I've said this on the show before, but in 2019, we launched a handyman concept around that idea. We were never going to franchise it. We were never going to do anything interesting with it at all, other than we're plumbers and we open a lot of walls. Like, that was the sum of our philosophy here. So we're like, hey, it'd be sweet if we could capture more value and close those walls up. Ended up being difficult, a weird business. But if all you do is patch, that probably makes it easier. We were like handymen. So anything. You read that as anything. Without getting into like FDD stuff, what is a standard truck produce in drywall repair? I'm trying to like envision this business and how big they can get. That's just interesting.
Yeah, we shot for about 800 a day per technician. So either a half day job or a full day job. And that's the way we looked at it. It was a hard business because we required skilled labor. And I know you guys are in skilled labor, but we're trying to find like a very specific drywall technician who doesn't know how to run a drywall business, but like likes doing drywall repair. Yeah. There's not that many of those in a market. And there was only so many customers. It's just people who had holes in their walls. So like, it was good. We did well with it. We had franchisees doing over $1 million a year. It wasn't as scalable of a business as I believe Rolling Suds is, which is why I transitioned. I also didn't own anything. I was an employee. And so this is the first one I've owned or that I own. I'm the majority owner of it.
What was the biggest patch? Was it Patch Boys?
Yeah, the Patch Boys. Right. Yep.
What was the biggest Patch Boys? Like, how big can it get?
When I left, I think one guy was doing like 1.4. I think he was on track to like 1.4, 1.5. But I mean, he was like 3 years in. Yeah. So like, not bad.
Yeah. And I guess the idea is you buy multiple locations, right? So that's where you really get your scale is you're buying four territories, five territories, same playbook. You know how to run one, you know how to run the other ones. And that's how you eventually get to that 4 or 5 million is you have to own five territories, right? Was that a common thing that you saw? I know you said that some of them owned. And to follow John's point is, what was the biggest owner? Did they own like 20 territories and they ran a 20 million?
No. So that was an emerging brand. When I got involved, it was like 3.5 years. And keep in mind, like, there weren't a ton of operators out there being established. So when I left, we were like on year 5, 6-ish of the franchise brand and the franchise kind of life cycle. But yeah, our best guy probably had like 5, 6 territories.
That's pretty decent. If they're each doing what, 500 to 3/4, and you're still in that 3 to 4 million territory, it's terrible.
Yeah, it was a good business. It had its challenges, but I think we did really well with it. I learned a ton. I was able to take everything I learned from there and like make it better and now apply it to
the next project. Yeah. So when is the standard customer a homeowner? Like a plumbing company that opens up holes in walls, or like property management doing tenant flips?
So it's customers who had a plumber come out or an HVAC person cut a hole in the ceiling, like had a leak, restoration company, like they needed to do a flip cut.
Yeah.
Those were the customers that we had. So residential consumer, there was almost no commercial side to that business. It was all residential customers that had holes in their walls.
I had somebody doing some drywall at my house, which, by the way, like, I totally get this. Drywall guys are ridiculously difficult to find. That's why we launched the concept around it. It's like, we're a $20 million company. We can't find somebody to close up our walls. It's crazy. So like, totally get it. But we had somebody doing some drywall work at our home, and they were describing how most of their work is for something called Redwood, which is like an apartment community. And they just go in and they flip units all day long. And that's like, that's his business, which is interesting. And he gets paid $1,000 a unit to just go in and like patch it.
Wow.
I don't know.
That was one thing. Like, there was no challenge getting franchisees leads.
Yeah. Just go on Facebook or talk to plumbers, I guess. That's interesting. But yeah, I can definitely see the ceiling for it. Okay. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to know about drywall patching. Like, there's probably so much, but like, all right, well, so average ticket was either like $400 to $800 probably, because you're either selling half days or full days.
Yep.
Lead gen was a lot of B2C or like referrals from the contractors. All right. So you'd follow them.
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to make you rate it, which we usually do whenever we're talking about new models.
Yeah, right.
1 to 10, how hard is it to launch a drywall repair?
By yourself or with a franchise?
Give me both, bro. Like, yeah. I'm curious.
Yeah. I think it's probably like 7 out of 10 in terms of like difficulty if you don't have a franchise. I would say if 10's being like the most difficult. I didn't ask which direction the scale's going.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. Yeah. I would say if you've got a good franchise brand behind you, especially where we were at, because we were first to market, like a 5. Any service business, you're going to have to dig in and you're a hunter. Like it doesn't matter whether it's drywall repair, HVAC, plumbing, solar, like you're out, you're hunting for the leads, right? It's different than a QSR where you just build the location. That's probably what I would rate it.
Okay. And the most challenging thing here is the labor.
Labor.
I can believe that because drywall's tough. It's very easy to make a mess. So you really have to be cautious about who goes where. And they have to do it perfect.
And they have to be nice.
They have to be nice.
Yeah. Which is like kind of hard to find, like someone who's also good at drywall and like nice too. I guess the reason why, like, it's just hard to find these people. You can't train them. They have to have 5 or more years of drywall experience. Yeah. And so, you know, our franchisees sometimes would be like handcuffed to a bad employee. They couldn't be quick to hire and quick to fire because it was hard finding another one. Now, the reason why it goes from a 7 to a 5 is we built systems for them. They all had employees recruited prior to going to training. Like, we didn't let them go to training without at least one guy hired. We provided all of the resources to find them, pay structures, all that. But like, you got to retain those people. You got to be constantly recruiting. It was a challenge.
If you're a home service entrepreneur that's just starting out or is early on in the journey and you haven't broken the $5 million revenue mark, we've got an event for you. This spring in Cleveland, March 19th to the 21st, we're hosting an event at my office. It's going to be awesome. Honestly, some of the most impactful visits of my career have been visits to companies that were larger than we were, that we could take lessons from and see how they're doing stuff. Like, get a behind the scenes look. How are they structuring warehouse? How are they thinking about call center? Can I talk to their managers? Can I understand what their KPIs are? We're going to dive into all that stuff. We are here to help people get above $5 million in revenue. So join us in Akron, Ohio, March 19th to the 21st for a Breaking 5 Million event. Love to see you there. Details are ownedandoperated.com.
Okay, Patch Boys. All right, so you guys sold a bunch. It was attached to Belfour, and that makes total sense. Like, that was smart. Like, total respect to that attachment. All right, and now you left, you partnered with somebody, you franchised their business, and you said, I think 76 units year to date?
We hit 80 today.
80. Oh, heck yeah, man. Awesome.
Thank you. 80 units, 27 franchisees. I looked at like 2 dozen businesses last year, actually.
How did you decide on pressure washing? What was the reasoning behind that?
So I, like many of the people on SMB, Twitter or X or whatever it's called these days, had a checklist of things I was looking for in a business. And for me, it was when I was analyzing business, like how many of the boxes does it check, right? And I was not like seeking out a pressure washing business. It just like, I met them at a franchise conference and they're like, we're good at power washing, not franchising. And I was like, great. Know nothing about power washing. Know a ton about franchising though. But it was only one that checked all the boxes for me. So like, I had the same thing that everyone else has: recession resistance, fragmented industry. I wanted unskilled labor after everything that we're talking about, you know, something that was need based, something that was niche. And like, niche businesses, I think they do really well for a variety of reasons. But there were two things that I was like, that were like really hard on any of the businesses I analyzed. And one was a difference in product offering, right? So like, a service that is different than everyone else and is objectively better. So think proprietary process. So Rolling Suds, they took me on a job and it was a 3,000 square foot house and they did it start to finish, 25 minutes, set up, tear down, everything. I was like, I thought it took an entire day to do these types of jobs. So that was mind blowing. So figured out they have this proprietary technology no one else has, which was really interesting. The other thing I was looking for was little to no competition in the franchise space. So one of the reasons we were able to take off with Patch Boys is we were first to market in the franchise space. Since then, we launched 300 plus units. Since then, there's like 6 or 7 drywall patch franchises that have like tried to ride the wave. But we were first, right? It's always good to be first. And so there are franchises out there that do power washing, but they do windows, they do gutters, they do painting. There wasn't like a national leader in power washing. And so that was really interesting to me. And so I was able to find both things with this business that I wasn't able to find anywhere else, which was a difference in product offering and little to no competition in the franchise space.
Yeah. So same questions about the business that I had about Patch Boys. What's an average day? What's an average ticket? And I don't understand the model very well, right? So like, walk me through the basics of power washing.
We just focus on residential and commercial power washing. Residential is going to be houses, driveways, decks, roofs, sidewalk, chimneys, like everything on the exterior of a home. That's the residential side of the business. The commercial side of the business is where the business becomes really interesting. So we've cleaned water towers, casinos, college campuses, HOAs, municipal buildings, government buildings, shopping centers, tennis courts, libraries, like you name it. Fast food restaurants. And the equipment that we have were built for the massive commercial jobs. Like we carry 1,000 gallons of liquid. It's a 16 box strap. It's a pretty big operation. And so the majority of our business is commercial because we're built to handle jobs that the guy who has a $300 machine and a gallon of bleach just can't do. And he's not going to. It doesn't make sense for him. He's knocking doors and doing $300 houses, which is fine.
So who does that before you guys enter the picture? Who's the guy doing this?
There's usually very little consistency in the customer, the client relation. Like customer that has 29 Taco Bells, for example, he doesn't have someone who's consistent that can handle the 29 Taco Bells on a quarterly clean. Typically, there might be like one, two, maybe three major guys in a market, but they've got like two to three trucks, maybe four trucks. And one of those trucks is being run by the guy who manages the trucks. Like I've listened to your guys' podcasts about like the $1 to $3 million range. Like most power washers are in that range. They're doing all the things. They don't have like any kind of scale. Yeah. So that's where those are the people we're competing against. And even with that like $1 to $3 million range, like they're typically doing windows, they're doing Christmas lights. So like they're all over the place. We've been able to really capture a lot of the commercial market share when we go into these different markets we've entered. As a result, I think of the fragmentation of the industry and most people are doing the power washing themselves and we're bringing in business owners. You know what I mean?
There's something to be said about bringing in a brand too, right? You're bringing in a trusted brand, a name, a backing that essentially guarantees a service versus Joe Schmo's pressure washing who... It just doesn't have that same kind of feel and look to it that I think that you get when you're trying to get the contract for the Tennessee Titans Stadium. They want someone who can handle that and make sure that they can handle it. That's interesting, though. I never thought of it from a large commercial standpoint that all of these places are ordering pressure washing. What does the larger tickets look like? So you talked about the 29 Taco Bells on a quarterly basis. Hotels, I would assume something similar. They're getting these big projects quarterly, biannually, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it could vary. We'll clean a building once every 5 to 7 years, and then there's buildings that need to be cleaned monthly or chemical plants that we'll need to clean weekly. There's so many use cases. But like I have a franchisee right now doing a courthouse. It's a $35,000 job. This is wild. He opened in New Orleans. They're doing the Super Bowl in 2025.
Yeah.
And so they launch, and we have an outbound commercial lead generation strategy where we've got like a cold outreach program for franchisees. And we get them a lead and they literally have a $50 million budget to clean up the city between now and next year. So
that's wild.
He's like week two doing that. It's wild. Yeah. So, I mean, it just varies. I mean, we do a lot of HOA work, a lot of HOA.
I was going to ask, you get dinged. I've seen people in our neighborhoods get dinged for that quite a bit. So I would imagine that's a huge driver of residential traffic.
It's in their contract. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like they have to do it.
What's the percentage of revenue commercial? I guess HOAs would be residential.
That would be classified for us as commercial because even though it's residential, because it's one customer that manages multiple buildings.
Gotcha. All right. So what's the split of revenue in a typical franchise, residential to commercial?
So we're mid-60s on average commercial.
Commercial. Okay. That is really interesting. Yeah. I would have never thought of that because when I think of power washing, maybe it's just because of what, like the very limited exposure to it I have off Twitter. It's like, it's driveways, right? It's driveways or like a house. Like I've had my house power washed. Have never thought of commercial. That is interesting. Did we dive into how days get priced? Like what's a standard day get sold for?
So we shoot for $2,000 to $2,500 per day on residential. And then we're $2,200 to $2,500 and off on commercial. We've got franchisees who have done jobs that take 6 hours and charge $4,900 because it's a paint removal job and no one else can do it. You know what I mean? But that's a good average of what we shoot for. There's two guys per truck with our process. And then we have 16-foot box trucks, 1,000 gallons of liquid, 1,000 feet of hose. So we're effectively overkill for every single residential. Our trucks are overkill for every single residential job that you can think of.
Yeah, that makes sense. How are they getting priced?
You mean how did the jobs get priced? Time?
Yes, like sales process, I guess, like what I'm asking. So does somebody come out and estimate it, or is there like an online tool of like you can, come out and estimate?
Yes, because we show up the polo, you know what I mean, iPad. We got the presentation that others don't have. It helps with conversion rate and average job size, all the stuff you guys know.
Are you using Service Titan?
No, we are not.
Is it a specific one that you guys made in-house, or is it just one of the other 17,000?
No. Yeah. So what I did is I built like what I wanted the customer to experience start to finish and what automation was to look like. And then I took that to all the different platforms. Service Titan was one of them. Workies was another that could build it. And then Service Minder was another that could build it. Everyone else told me, we can't build this for you. They didn't have the functionality. And so then I just negotiated the best one and then picked the best one.
Let me take a step back. So back into franchising, right? We talk a lot about on this podcast about different home service businesses. They all have their intricacies, right? They all have their specialities. But on a whole, from a framework perspective, I'd like to think that they have many similarities, which allows us to talk in generalities about lead gen and recruitment and all this kind of fun stuff. In your experience, building three vastly different home service businesses, and especially the systems for those home service businesses, how do you feel about that phrase that I just said? Were there a lot of similarities in it, or was it more difficult than we're conceptualizing?
No, I mean, there's definitely similarities in terms of marketing, recruiting. I think, you know, and those layers are going to be the same in home service businesses. There's different types of people that work in different businesses and different types of brands. But when I was looking, I was only looking in residential and commercial services because I knew that the systems that I created from a franchise side, I could plug into insulation, I could plug into solar, I could plug into painting, I could plug into tree care. So the technical element of the business varies, but the actual like systems that you need to support franchisees and actually like run the business are pretty much the same.
Were there any big surprises that you ran into though, that you went, wow, this is just outlandish that I have to deal with this?
With
systems that you put plug in thinking it's going to work and it's completely broken from the start. You go, we got to start from scratch on this.
So this is actually really funny. This business that I thought we were going to be 80% residential, 20% commercial, because it took like the founders of Rolling Suds, it's a 33-year-old business. It took them like 25 years to have any relevance in commercial at all. So I was like, okay, best case scenario, our franchisees will be like 30%, 20%, 15% commercial. I had to like completely correct course after I saw the demand on the commercial side. And we invested more heavily in hiring more people and bringing in more marketing companies to really service that need on the commercial side that was much larger than I thought. So that was actually a good situation, but I was happy to be wrong about that. We had to edit our approach because of that demand that we saw.
Yeah, I don't think I would have thought of that. I already said that. I was very surprised when you said that. I was like, yeah, it makes sense. Like, who else is going to do it? And I really can't think of like an institutional business around doing it.
No, I used to run facilities programs, right, for Fortune 500 companies. And now that I'm looking back at it, we never did it ourselves. There wasn't a single person that was out there. We just didn't have the equipment to do it. We always hired out. And so now that makes significantly more sense who you're focusing on and really where that monetary value is driven from.
And that's where you're going to get a lot of the recurring element, right? The cost per customer acquisition versus the lifetime value of the customer is staggering. Taco Bell franchisee, the 29 locations, it's a $14,000 quarterly cleaning. And like he paid a marketing company $175 for that lead one time. As long as he does a good job, like that'll be the customer forever for him for $175.
I need to talk to these guys.
That's beautiful. So how big do we think these things get?
Good question.
I will tell you that the people that I am bringing into the system have the expectation that they are building 10 to 20 truck press plus and want to go in other markets. And we've been very selective with who comes in because those are the types of franchisees that we're attracting, that we're signing up. We're bringing in C-level executives, multiple different C-level executives, leaving white collar America with tremendous amount of capital to go build a really sophisticated blue collar business. My expectation is that it's our job to help deliver, right, as a franchisor. But it's also, they've underwritten the opportunity to say, this is doable. You know what I mean? Like, these are very sophisticated people. Most of them have come from Twitter, of the space that you guys are a part of and I'm a part of. But we'll see in 5 years. The expectation is that it's going to be big business. I'm planning to build the biggest power washing company in the world with a bunch of really successful franchisees that all have the same goals in mind.
So 10 to 20 trucks.
So our franchise disclosure document, I have the last 3 years of what a truck does based on our FDD, EBITDA per truck, everything. So our trucks do $373,000 top line with $147,000. That's at scale. So yeah. We have 5 trucks that operate full time in the Northeast. It's 205 days out of the year. So
that was one of my next questions is like, it's freezing. Well, you know, what do you do?
If it's 40 or above, we're power washing.
Yeah.
I'm in John. Yeah. We were doing the wrong business, man.
We do 80% of our revenue in about 9 months. Our corporate location, we do a little over 2.2. We do 80%. From March.
Does the business move indoor though? So the last 20% is indoor pressure washing, or it's not even a thing?
Nope. And I will say commercial is less seasonal than residential. If we were a predominantly residential business, then it'd be a much more seasonal business. Commercial, what we'll do is we'll say, hey, Mr. Property Manager, if you need us to come out in May, it's going to be this much. Or if we can come and do it in October before your fiscal year is over at any point in October, it'll be this much. And so that helps offset the seasonality a little bit. So then you just set up your recurring, you know, yearly cleanings or every 2 year cleanings during the slower months. Because residential's hot and heavy from like March to August. Like you're grinding, doing 5-6 residential jobs a day.
Equipment cost, is this like $100,000?
Our trucks are about $135,000.
Okay. So that's like a sewer jetting.
I was just going to say, it's not much different than sewer jetting or even a used pump truck.
We need 16-foot chassis. So we use Isuzu NRRs or Ford 550s. They got to carry 19,500 GVW gross vehicle weight.
Yeah.
Because we carry 1,000 gallons of liquid.
That's a lot of water.
Just the entry point of the actual truck to carry that water is $85,000 before the box, before the equipment, before the wrap, before the installation, all that.
And then the equipment itself is what, 30, 40?
34, yeah. We retrofit a lot of it ourselves. So we get like 4 times the gallon flow and we can power wash 4 or 5 stories from the ground with our equipment.
Yeah.
No one else can do that. So we build the trucks ourselves for franchisees. We source the vehicles, everything.
And so how big is your team as the franchisor? What does that look like? I'm always curious about running a franchise versus buying them.
So we've got 13 employees, including me and the founders, and we've got 7 franchisees out operating in 22 territories. Everyone else who's signed is opening Q1 of next year. So we'll have the rest of the franchisees open by the end of March who have signed. Takes us about 9 weeks to get them, the trucks built and launched and all that kind of stuff. So we're really top heavy, but I raised capital so that I could do this the right way. Didn't know how to raise capital before I did this. Didn't even know what a cap table was. I raised capital last year from like David Barr. You might know David Barr. He has like over 1,000 restaurants. He's a mentor of mine and other people in the franchise industry who could provide intellectual capital in addition to actual capital, long-term investors and mentors. So I knew we were going to grow because if I just do what I've done the last 2 times, like, you know, we'll grow a big company. I did not expect to have this many units. Like my projection for the year was like 32 because I had never sold a brand from no franchised location. You know what I mean? Hey, there's no franchisees, but buy into the like I'd never done that before, but we've taken off. We're one of the fastest growing franchises in the country right now. And so that's part of the reason I raised capital. So I had kind of buffer to build the team before I need the team.
Yeah.
But what does that look like? You got some marketing guys that are doing biz dev. You have admin people that are handling HR, hiring, trucks. What does that breakdown look like?
Yeah. So franchisors have internal team members and then they have suppliers. Mm-hmm. And we have about 16 different suppliers for equipment, insurance, marketing, like CRM, all that. And all those companies, I basically have them marching in the same direction and manage them. And then I have an executive team. So I have a senior VP of operations, a VP of operations, VP of onboarding, and VP of marketing. They have people underneath them. That's how we do it. And then we've got marketing companies that do outbound lead gen for commercial customers. They're external, but they run through our corporate. We've got a command center for leads. We turn those leads on a month before franchisees go to training. So we've got like systems in place from both internal and external. And I built all that. It took me about 8 months to build that before we even launched. So negotiating with vendors, making sure that they're going to deliver for franchisees, like all that stuff was done before we even launched our first franchise.
Awesome.
Thanks for tuning in to the first section of our conversation with Aaron Harper. We picked this back up on Thursday when we drop our next episode. We just had such a great conversation. We just kept going and we ended up making two episodes out of it. So the back half is just as good. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for tuning in to Owned and Operated, the podcast for home service entrepreneurs. If you enjoyed today's episode, please hit the like button and subscribe to the podcast. If you have any questions or topics you'd like us to cover, feel free to reach out. You can find me on Twitter at Wilson Companies. I'll see you next time.